We're also talking to David Buttleman today. He is the senior claimant representative at Allsup Inc. What is Allsup Inc.? Well, they deal with Social Security disability benefits, and organizations need to know the importance of how they can help their individual employees if something should happen, and how we should go about handling that. So we're going to be talking about that today. David, thank you very much for coming on the show with us.
Thank you for having us.
So, for all those who may not know about today's topic, because we're really going to be talking about Social Security disability benefits and how that affects organizations, not only people, but certainly employers and why it matters, could you kind of give me a little bit of a background as to what exactly Social Security disability insurance is?
Basically, it was introduced in the 1950s, and it's a federally mandated insurance. The best way to describe it is that if you think about FICA taxes, both employers and employees contribute to that. And when someone is disabled, unable to work, they're able to file for the benefits, and there's a process involved. But if they're approved, the benefit replaces about 30 to 40% of their pre-disability income.
Now, when we're talking about Social Security disability, can you maybe give me some examples of what somebody would need to be eligible for this insurance or to be able to take advantage of this insurance?
Some basics: you have to have worked and paid into Social Security disability, first of all. You have to have a medically determinable impairment. That's Social Security's technical definition of disability. Easier way to say that would be you have to have a condition that is anticipated to last 12 months or end in death.
That is not a comforting statement.
No, it's not.
I understand. This is tough stuff. When you've helped over more, in my understanding from what I've read and what I've been told, you've helped more than 5,000 people with these type of disabilities. What do you think is some of the importance of this program and why employers should be interested in helping people with it?
Sure. That's a great question, and I'm going to try to break it down into two parts here, if possible. For the individual, basically, they cannot work. There's no income coming in. They've got the stress of the condition or conditions. Sometimes it's plural. It affects their entire life. What they benefit from Social Security disability is in income. They can also get cost of living increases. Social Security usually gives those. There are 2 years where that did not occur. They also can protect their retirement. They get Medicare entitlement, so they have a health insurance coverage. They have some incentive to try to go back to work, and no penalty for doing that for up to 9 months. It's a safety net of sorts. Their children under age 18 can receive benefits, so there's a host of incentives there for the individual. For the employer, it's similar. Their care for their employee may be such that they're concerned about how that person is going to provide for themselves. Remember, it's only 30 to 40% of the income that's replaced by Social Security disability. So it's not the end all, but it's better than the alternative, which is nothing. And we've had claimants who actually don't have any income at all. So with Social Security disability, it's good to see them have some kind of a way to support themselves. If there is a long-term disability, and that's where the employers come into play, some of these employers provide long-term disability, that coordinates with Social Security disability. Employees get the Medicare, the entitlement to prescription drug coverage as well with the Medicare, which we didn't talk about for the individuals. They could receive COBRA insurance extension. And so those are some of the incentives for the employer there to consider.
So we're talking about COBRA, we're talking about certainly long-term disabilities. Is this program one that supplements with those programs or is separate from and only happens once those run out?
Good question again. The way it works with long-term disability first is that, of course, if the employer provides a long-term disability policy, generally that will start much before Social Security disability does. It's a longer process with Social Security disability. But there is a coordination. Long-term disability plans were designed to coordinate with Social Security disability. With COBRA, that's just an insurance extension. And there are some guidelines there. If a person is deemed disabled, that COBRA extension is pushed out just a little further.
You know, one of the things that people always talk about when we're looking at these type of things and these obviously very serious situations, you know, companies say to themselves, you know, as an HR professional, as a person who's maybe the owner of an organization, why is it important for me to know this? It's something that somebody else is going to take care of. So why should it matter to me?
A lot of times, individuals, if they're left on their own, will not follow the entire process through Social Security Disability. In other words, we talked about it being somewhat complicated. There are several steps. So without representation like ALSA, individuals tend to get frustrated, they give up, they quit, they drop their claim, and they end up with no income like we were talking about before. So the employers need to know that it's important to educate their employees, maybe refer them to a representative to help that person all the way through the process. It can last, the Social Security disability process can last up to 2 years before a favorable decision comes along.
And so these are case by case, clearly. And do they have to go in front of a panel or a judge? Or how does that happen in terms of determining factors and whether they get this program or not?
Great. So there are steps to the process and to the application. Initially, you're going to file for Social Security disability benefits. There are a lot of forms to fill out, and those forms can be difficult to understand and know how to fill it out if you're disabled. Remember, you're dealing with an impairment. You're not feeling well. You're not up to par. So you're frustrated to have to fill these forms out. Sometimes they're done halfway. They're not completed well. After the forms do get submitted, most of the claims at the initial level are denied. As many as two-thirds are denied. So that is the point at which many people give up, saying, well, I've been denied, I'm not going to try anymore. That's not the case. There are several steps beyond that that a representative can help that individual follow through with. The next step would be a reconsideration level. There are a handful of states that have removed that, trying to streamline the process, but that can take as many as 6 months to work through that process as well. And then there's a hearing level. You asked about a panel. It's not a panel, but it's an administrative law judge. So the judge is there to decide whether the person meets Social Security guidelines. There's one more step, and that's the appeals council. If the judge does not agree that the person is disabled, you can go in front of a board, usually one or two judges, who will look to see if there were errors on the face of law by that original judge. So it's a long process.
You talked a little bit about that these situations are obviously individual, and I just wanted to ask, where does the medical professional sit in this? In terms of, you talked about the administration having to do with the Social Security Administration. You talked a little about the employer. Could you tell me about the partnering in with the medical professional?
Absolutely. It's critical for the doctors to support their patients or the employee of the employer. It's crucial to the judge or anybody in the process of Social Security adjudicating the claim to help them make that decision. Sometimes patients think that their doctors are saying they're supporting them for disability. It turns out not to be the case. Representative will go after the medical records to see exactly what each doctor is saying. And the judges and the adjudicators are looking for information that helps them determine whether the person could do their past job, but any other work as well.
So it's really, it's a three-way partnership on these decisions. And it does this partnership include communication between, and I guess the real question comes down to private rights, right? So, you know, we're talking about privacy in terms of this information.
Absolutely.
How does that whole thing work with, you know, you've got four parties now. You've got the employee, you've got the employer, you've got the medical profession, or maybe you have five. You have the Social Security Administration, and maybe you have the, you know, ALSUP representative. So tell me a little about that and how that works.
With the laws that have come through, HIPAA and the like, there are procedures we have to follow. We have to get the claimant's permission to receive and provide information back and forth from the doctors to Social Security. So we take that very seriously, and we have to follow the law. So we do that. With regard to all of the communication, there's always the highest level of concern for confidentiality. So everyone involved takes that seriously.
Great. Tell me a little about overall, maybe at a macro level, what are some of the trends you're seeing in regards to Social Security, disability insurance? You know, there's a lot of talk, certainly we'll be heading into the presidential election here very, very soon. Tell me some of the trends and what you're seeing.
They are facing challenges for sure. There is a growing number of baby boomers who are reaching retirement age. So there's the retirement applications that they've anticipated that are starting to hit. But there's also the folks who just quite aren't at the retirement age that are becoming disabled or having a struggle with working, and they start considering the Social Security disability process. So the combination of retirement and disability has overwhelmed Social Security. They've got a lot of applications. At the same time, David, they're seeing that their staffing is being reduced because of budgetary concerns. So that is you asked for a macro level, that's the macro level. A lot of claims, not enough people to handle the process.
I would think that the budgeting, certainly from a federal level, and the staffing levels are probably also real challenges when it comes to appeals and hearings and so forth.
Yes. Yes, it is. You talked about how the elections are coming up and the budget. I think they're talking about the Social Security Disability Trust Fund possibly being depleted by 2016 unless Congress acts. So that's going to be very important to not only the disabled population, but also to the Social Security employees in the process.
So tell me a little about ALSUP itself, you know, maybe a little bit of the history and background and how that works.
Sure. Jim Alsop started the company back in 1984. He had been a field representative with Social Security, and he saw how there was a need for people to be helped through the process from an outside position. He started that business in 84 and has grown it since. We help people nationwide. We work with long-term disability carriers as well as individuals off the street who are disabled.
When you are talking to companies, what are some of the key things that you can tell them that you can give them in terms of benefits? Because, you know, it is about cost-benefit analysis. So what are some of the benefits? What are some of the things that you can do for an organization that they would see the benefit of, you know, having a company like yours come on board and assist them?
Sure. What we think we bring to the table is not just the compassionate care for an employee or an employer, but we can also bring the monetary reward to a long-term disability insurance company. Basically, we talked before about Social Security replacing the 30% to 40%. Generally, long-term disability is going to reimburse at a higher level. They're going to reimburse quicker, faster, and they're going to reimburse usually around 60% to 65% of the pre-disability income. If Social Security disability is secured, there is an offset. The insurance company will continue to pay the difference from what Social Security pays the individual so that the individual receives their whole benefit. It's just paid by two different parties now, if that makes sense.
Sure. No, it certainly does. So it gets them more money in their pocket.
That's correct.
Also takes a little bit of the maybe the cost away from the organization in terms of worrying about it or
That's
the
correct.
Paperwork that goes around. Because I'm sure there's plenty. You talked a little bit about all the paperwork involved. So you're really a third-party administrator to this, correct?
We help that process along, yes. We think we're benefiting both the individual, who is our primary responsibility, as well as an insurance party or an employer, absolutely.
Okay. What is the role of a representative that may be helping somebody or helping an organization through the process? What role do they play in this?
The primary role is to basically shepherd that individual through the entire process, the two-year process, the several steps. Our responsibilities then also include making sure that the forms are filled out accurately, that we help them gather information from their medical providers, that we understand all of their conditions, and then that we can communicate that clearly and concisely to Social Security in the terminology that they are used to.
And you're listening to the HR Power Hour. We're talking to David Biltelman, and he is with ALSUP, Inc. By the way, that website is www.ALSUP, that's A-L-L-S-U-P-I-N-C.com for organizations and companies. Okay, so, you know, I think now that we have a few minutes here towards the end of this segment, what I'd like to do is ask you to provide me an example. Take me through a journey of somebody who, you know, may have been in this unfortunate situation, and kind of walk me through the steps in the process and maybe an outcome for this person if, in fact, you have one. And I think that might help the listeners understand exactly, A, how the process works, and B, how you can help them.
One example that sticks out in my mind is a lady who had been disabled because of a back condition. She had been in a janitorial position and was a single mother and had been disabled for a year, year and a half by the time we picked up the file. At the time, the claim had made its way through to the hearing level. That was the position that I was in at the time. I was a senior claim representative, so I'd represent the claimant before the judge. We took the claim before an administrative law judge, and a vocational expert and a medical expert was there to testify as well. The claimant did have good medical support from her doctors. However, and this happens, judges are people just like everyone else. This particular judge did not believe the claimant's testimony. So while she did a very good job of trying to explain her condition, and the medical records were there, and we represented the claim to the best of our ability, the judge denied the claim. Now, we filed the appeals. It came back twice on appeal and finally won the claim. However, in the process, the claimant suffered and struggled financially, went through a little bit of emotional turmoil in one of the hearings, in that at the hearing, the judge asked the claimant to take off her shoe and bring it up to show him. And the claimant was obviously befuddled and dumbstruck. But with a back condition and the allegations that this lady had, she talked about having foot drag. So the judge was checking to see if her shoe was worn. The judge then handed it to the doctor and asked him to read into the record his observation of the shoe. The lady was standing there and was upset, went back to her seat, and we had had pre-hearing conferences, the claimant and I, so I was able to learn a little more about this lady's background. And in that discussion, she was able to tell me that the way she was brought up was basically to do her best, work hard, and show respect to doctors, judges, people in authority. So I had an inkling that there was probably a story as to why that shoe was not worn the way it could have or should have been. So I asked the claimant to explain some of that to the judge, and it boiled down to her basically stating that she had a brand new pair of shoes, shoes that she saved for her best occasions, so there was no wear on that shoe. We still lost that particular time at the hearing level, but we continued the fight and encouraged the doctors to continue to support the claimant. So ultimately, we won the claim, but it was a long struggle. That's, in my opinion, a great reason to have a representative. That lady would have given up a long time prior had we not been there to help her along. She had a valid disability and deserved to have someone fight for her.
No, that's a great example. I think, you know, you may not think of things like that. You know, it's funny, when you were telling the story, I was saying to myself, well, it's a hearing. I suspect she's probably wearing the best shoes she has. It's common sense. Who would think of wearing the everyday shoe that would show necessarily the wear or tear that you do go with? It almost would have made more sense for the judge to say, get me the everyday pair of shoe or something.
Right,
but
right.
But that certainly is an example that's tough out there. How frustrated do you get sometimes? How frustrated does the organization get with the process? And with, I mean, when you're talking 2 years, to me that just seems crazy.
And that's actually good, David. It had been at the height of my career. It had been up to a year and a half wait just at the hearing level. So you're asking how frustrated? Very frustrated. For the stories like the one I just gave, there are also stories that were very good. Judges who were compassionate, who would allow the claimant to tell their story, who understood, who would work with the claimant and with the representative and paid claims much more easily and much more readily. As a representative, all I wanted was someone who would listen to the story, that didn't have their mind made up ahead of time, or who wouldn't just be judgmental in regard to having a bias against a claimant.
Yeah, I would.
So there was a lot of frustration.
Sure, I would think that sometimes there are. You know, and I suspect you have stories with people trying to get away with things as well. I mean, those things do happen out there, I'm sure.
That's why the judges sometimes, you know, can become that way as well. Sure, they've seen it all, and so it's hard. It's hard to maintain a balance.
Sure. No, I would suspect it is. When you're talking, one of the questions that I thought of while you were talking about that story is, does age have a factor in this in terms of, I mean, certainly I would think that there are maybe more claims as you get older, but does age really play a role in this type of disability insurance?
It does. I'll give you kind of a base explanation of this. The younger you are, under age 50 and under, it's extremely hard. We have to prove you can't do any job at all. And the examples we use are ticket taker, a receptionist, a Walmart greeter, anything, very simple jobs on up. The older you get, once you hit 50, age 55, and then 60, the rules change, and it's somewhat easier to prove the disability. We're then dealing with, are there other jobs the person can do? Do they have the skills to do those jobs with the conditions they have? So, yes, it gets easier as you approach that retirement age.
Has that retirement age moved, or not the retirement age, but has the age necessarily moved in terms of somebody who, you know, as we get older and as, you know, we do know Social Security moves up in the ages from 65 to 67 and a half to 70,
correct,
as, you know, within that. Does that all move? Is that part of it?
It is, in that we do have individuals who now won't hit that full retirement age until 67, so they would be eligible for disability until that point.
Okay, so when you're talking about ALSUP itself, you said you're nationwide. Are you in every state? How does that work in terms of helping organizations and companies? Like, do you have an office in every state, or is it regional? How does that work?
We have our headquarters in Belleville, Illinois, near St. Louis, Missouri. But we do have representatives strewn throughout the country in different locations, so they're more regional in their representation role. But everything as far as the initial applications and the handling of the claim originates and starts with the headquarters.
How long have you been with the organization?
21 years.
21 years. I would say you've seen it all.
Seen enough, yeah.
Seen enough to at least understand. And according to your bio, it talks about you've been at hearings in over 29 states, 10 judicial circuits. Have you seen differences,
that's right,
as you go across from state to state? Is there less or more tolerance depending on where you are in the country? It'd just be an understanding for the audience to know that.
Yes, absolutely there is. I think that's one of the concerns of the commissioner as well, is that there's some vast differences. Some areas pay very, very few. I'm talking 10%, sometimes, you know, around that area. Other areas of the country or other judges will pay 80 or 90%. The commissioner has worked hard to try to bring some uniformity to that process. But when I was doing the job, you knew the judges, you knew the offices, and you had an idea of what to expect where. We prepare our claimants for that as well, and we knew if we had to file for an appeal, we would warn our claimants ahead of time. So,
well, that's interesting, because you would think, and maybe you can tell me differently, that it's a federal.
It is.
It's a federal rule, and you would think that unless there are state statutes that apply differently, that it should be applied universally across the country.
I told my claimants that while it is a federal program, these are individuals, they're people, and they see things differently. Maybe they've had situations where they've been tricked or fooled, and now their opinions have changed. So coaching the claimant through what to expect was part of our job. It's one of the beauties of having a representative, especially like us. Also, if it's nationwide, we knew the different territories. We could help the individuals with anticipating what to expect.
Sure, and my understanding is you handle over 50% of the claims across the country. Is that correct?
I believe that's right, yes.
So you're in Belleville, Illinois. How far from St. Louis are you?
We're just across the river. It's a matter of a few minutes.
Oh, that's great. And how's the weather been this year?
It's been hot and dry. We've been in a drought.
Wow. So I want to thank you very much for taking the opportunity to be on the HR Power Hour. I think this is a very important topic, and I think that probably I'll be the first to admit I didn't know a lot about it. You know, I met one of your representatives up at the Workers' Comp Summit here in Maine. We've had lunch a couple times and talked a little bit about this, but this is a topic that I don't think a lot of people know. And I don't know if they really knew that there's help out there. So I really appreciate taking the opportunity today to bring this to the forefront.
Thank you, David. I appreciate the time.
And now the tip of the week. Do you deserve a raise? Simply because you want to be earning more or because it's a long time since you've had your last pay increase, it's not a good enough reason to justify a raise. You must be able to justify it in terms of what you have done for the organization. Did you increase profits? Did you cut costs? Or did you reduce man hours? Have you been given more work, more responsibility? These are reasons you have to provide if you expect to present a convincing case to your boss. Next week on the HR Power Hour, we're going to be talking with John Sacerdoti, the president of the National Association of Personnel Services, or NAPS. He's going to be talking about the organization, why it's important to the recruiting and staffing profession, and how it matters to you. Second, we're going to be talking to Christine Avery. She's the Senior Vice President of Human Resources at Fisk Solution in Lewiston, Maine, and a Senior Professional of Human Resources. She's going to be talking about her course that is taken at University of Southern Maine, having to do with the preparation and certification for your SPHR or PHR HR certification. A great topic. That's next week on the HR Power Hour. Thank you for listening, and catch us every week at 2 p.m. on News Talk WLOB 1310 AM or streaming live on WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.